The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So tonight, I thought I would talk about dukkha, suffering, the Pali word usually translated, the Pali word for suffering, usually translated as dukkha. A couple of weeks ago, I talked about the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, a kind of an overview of basically the Buddha's inspiration to awakening. And the whole orientation around his journey was structured because he was asking the question, why do we suffer? And is it possible to be free from that suffering? And so the word dukkha, the Pali word dukkha, is right at the center of the Buddha's journey. And I wanted to explore this word a little bit with you. Because there's different ways it's used. And so I wanted to go through the different ways this word is used and to explore some of the ways those different meanings interact in the teachings. So first of all, there's three basic ways this word dukkha is used. It's the first and kind of most simplest way is to refer to a very basic, simple aspect of our experience. Whenever we have an experience, it's kind of, we are contacted with our senses, and every single experience that we have has a very basic kind of tone to it. It's either pleasant, it's unpleasant, or it's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So this very bare aspect of experience, sometimes we call this the feeling tone, the unpleasant quality that happens from time to time, maybe more than from time to time, happens a lot in our experience. That unpleasant quality, the word dukkha is used for that. Just that simple, bare, something's unpleasant. So we cut ourselves with a knife. The pain of that, the unpleasant experience of that, is called dukkha. That's an unpleasant quality. The physical damage to the body will create this kind of unpleasantness. This kind of unpleasantness happening at our sense spaces is not the kind of dukkha that the Buddha was talking about we can overcome. In fact, he said that somebody who's fully enlightened, somebody who's fully awake, who's released the, who's become free from dukkha, will experience this unpleasantness in their body. They'll experience this physical dukkha. And so this right there points to two different definitions to the word. Because someone who's fully awake, the text there says that, okay, there are people who are free in this world, who are non-reactive, who are experiencing peace, and they're experiencing pleasant experience, unpleasant experience, and neither unpleasant nor pleasant experience. And then there are kind of everybody else who's all reactive and frustrated about what's going on, and they're also experiencing pleasant and unpleasant and neutral experience. So what's the difference between these two people? And the text goes on to say that when somebody who is ordinary or not trained or not free experiences unpleasant experience, they react. They get frustrated, angry, confused, they beat their breast and say, why me? So there's a reactivity that happens. When they experience pleasant experience, there's also a reactivity that happens. They want to hold on to it. They want to keep it. They want to make sure that it doesn't go away. And so the experience of someone who is not at peace will have this added element of reactivity to this pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral experience. And the teaching goes on to say, somebody who is free, somebody who's awakened, who is basically at peace, when they experience an unpleasant sensation, they experience an unpleasant sensation. It doesn't go any further. There's not that reactivity. When they experience a pleasant sensation, they experience a pleasant sensation. It doesn't proliferate further to needing to hold on to that, to cling to it. So this points to a second definition for this word, dukkha, which is the dukkha of reactivity. That when we experience anything, when it's pleasant, we tend to like it, we want more of it. When it's unpleasant, we tend to want to get rid of it. And that that reactivity, that aversion, the anger, the hatred, the greed, the desire, the pride, the arrogance, all of that, the confusion, the boredom, all of those emotional reactivities, that is what I would call the dukkha of the third noble truth, which is what the dukkha that the Buddha said was possible to be free of. That we can experience pleasant, unpleasant, neutral sensation, navigate the world, live our lives without that kind of reactive experience. And it doesn't lead us to a place of passivity. I think this is an important piece in understanding this this teaching. The freedom from reactivity does not mean non-action. And as we open to unpleasant sensation without reactivity, as we open to pleasant experience without wanting to hold on, the natural movement of the heart that is not constricted is to act with wisdom, with compassion. And so the understanding, and it often sounds in a way that when, you know, if we're not reacting, what would we be doing? You know, I think this speaks to our, so much of our habitual ways that we act does come from reactivity. And it's like we cannot fathom what we would do if we weren't acting out of reactivity. And so it takes a little bit of trust to begin to explore letting go of reactivity and seeing what's there in the heart. What's there in the heart as anger, aversion, greed, and delusion fall away? What's in the heart when aversion, greed, and delusion fall away is not passivity. It's a heart of acting with compassion and wisdom and kindness and generosity and love. So the second kind of dukkha that the Buddha says is possible to be free of is this dukkha of reactivity. The third kind of dukkha is the dukkha I'd like to explore a little more depth tonight. The third definition of dukkha is sometimes it's called the characteristic of dukkha. That there are three characteristics of all experience. This teaching is primarily the teaching termed as characteristics is found primarily in some of the later teachings. But the three things that are described as characteristics of all experience are shot all through the teachings from the very beginning of the Buddhist teaching. And these three things that are said to be characteristic of all experience are that it's impermanent. Every experience we have is going to end. So that's a kind of a truth in a way, that whatever experience arises will pass away. So there's a kind of a characteristic, all experience is impermanent. The second characteristic, kind of a corollary of this first, is that because all experience is impermanent, there is nothing that will be a place that is reliable for us to find happiness in our by holding on to our experience, let's say, by creating some or constructing something that we can say, yes, I've constructed this thing, and this is where I'm going to find my happiness. Anything that's constructed will fall apart and thereby is unreliable. There's nothing that we can count on to last, to produce a lasting, permanent happiness. So this is the characteristic unreliability. I like to call it unreliability. And this is also dukkha. This word is also dukkha. The third characteristic of all experience is that basically it is conditioned. It has no thing nature, no nature of being something. It is anything that we can point to in any place, in any time, anything we can point to, again, kind of related to this corollary of impermanence, but it's such a fast impermanence. Anything that we can point to is already in transition. There's a coming into being of something and a falling away of something, and everything is in this process of transition. There's no thingness that we can point to in anything. Now this one, you know, we can just set this one aside. This is what is, sometimes I call this the out of control nature of experience or the coreless nature of experience. It's also called the not self nature of experience. That there's no thing in any point of experience. You can't stop the flow and say this is a thing because it's already changing, it's already tumbling on, because everything is this conditioned transitioning nature. Particle physics understands this very well. I mean, if we think at the level of our you know, what the universe is composed of, there is nothing stable in this world. There's temporary appearance of stability, but there's no thingness to anything. And so this one, I'm not going to try to talk about this one tonight. The not-self teaching, the teaching of anatta, we don't have to believe it or not believe it tonight. Tonight I want to explore and talk about the second one, which is this unreliability of experience. In some ways, you know, this is called a characteristic because it's more like it's a truth in a way of what is happening in the world, of what's happening in our bodies and what's happening inside, outside of us, that there's nothing that is lasting long enough to be a place of reliable happiness. This is true for the Buddha. This is true for somebody who is fully awakened. And so, like with the, somebody who's fully awakened, somebody who is non-reactive, somebody who is at peace, for somebody who is at peace, there is still no experience, no thing, no place they are landing that is, oh, this is where I'm finding happiness. It's in fact, the peace comes from recognizing there is nowhere to land. And so this is kind of counterintuitive for us in terms of thinking of peace. We think of peace as being, if I can only construct something and land there, that's where I can rest. And so this is a hard truth for us to open to. And so this is where I want to explore this a little bit tonight. So for everyone, for somebody who is awakened, as I said, for somebody who is free, there is still nowhere to land. But when we are resisting this truth, when we don't align ourselves with this truth or don't fully understand this truth of unreliability, you know, actually our minds convince us that there is something that's reliable. Over and over again, we distort this, we distort what's happening, and we believe, yes, there is some place that this is where I'll find happiness. This is the way greed works a lot of the time. Actually, the way aversion works too, the way greed works. It has convinced us, greed has convinced us that there's something out there that will be reliable and that will make me happy. And so we fashion ourselves in that way and act on that wanting. And likewise with aversion, you know, with not wanting something. Our aversion has convinced us that it is the getting rid of and the conditions that are constructed in the getting rid of that will be where we find peace. And so our minds have bought into the story of greed and aversion, believing there's something reliable that we can find, something reliable that can be constructed in the world, in our experience, where we will finally be able to rest and be happy forever. Now, we don't consciously think it this way. I mean, it's really interesting to watch how greed and aversion work if you begin to explore this in your own experience. You know, with mindfulness, with our meditative practice, we start to look at these experiences. I'm offering some information here, but really what we need to do is start looking at this in our own minds, watch how our own minds work. And it's kind of stunning in very small and simple ways to watch greed believing getting that thing will make me happy. On certain retreats, it's been so clear to me, having a piece of chocolate in the moment of that wanting and the movement towards it and the getting of that chocolate, there's a moment of the mind actually thinking, finally, yes, I've arrived. Really? I mean, it's actually, you know, I mean, when we think about this even for like 20 seconds, we realize that the pleasure, the happiness of having a piece of chocolate doesn't last very long. But in the moment of that greed, the mind has fully bought in to this is going to be happy. This is what's going to be happy. This is going to make me be okay in the world. It's actually interesting to explore this dynamic because, you know, if we're buying into that that idea, this is what's going to make me happy. So buying into that distortion around reliability, we're buying into the distortion that yes, there's something out there that will make me happy. We don't actually, in some ways, it's like we get a moment of the feeling of, oh yeah, you know, that tastes pretty good. But almost immediately when we get that, we may be reaching for the next piece of chocolate because our mind is recognizing, even as it's tasting the chocolate, that is going away. And, oh, maybe another one, until we get to the feedback that, oh, I feel sick from having so much chocolate. So there is a little bit of happiness that comes from getting what we want. But we miss actually, you know, in that movement to get and to have and to hold and to control the whole distorted mindset around that, we actually end up missing the pleasantness, the real pleasantness of the experience of the chocolate. I mean, we taste it a little bit, but I've noticed in my own practice, you know, when I actually am experiencing, like if I'll have a piece of chocolate, if I'm actually letting myself notice the increase of pleasure, the decrease of pleasure, you know, actually the pleasure of chocolate lasts way longer than I thought. You know, I would have thought it lasted maybe, you know, just as long as it was in my mouth, but it lingers. Not even, there's the lingering of the experience even past the flavor in the mouth. A lingering of a sense of kind of relaxation or something that's related to the chocolate. So if we are not caught on that wheel, and this is one of the paradoxes, you know, it's like if we're not caught on that wheel of trying to figure out how to control and get and change, we actually get to experience more fully the pleasure, well, and the pain of our lives. So in this kind of movement of thinking that something should be reliable, you know, the greed and aversion, having this perspective, something should be reliable. We feel they should be reliable. Based on that belief, we take it personally when things aren't reliable. Much of the time, we take it personally or we blame somebody else. We either feel like we failed in navigating the world, that somehow everybody else has managed to figure out how to be permanently happy, and I haven't. Or we blame somebody else for the fact that we're not permanently happy. Rather than understanding or recognizing that this is a truth, things are unreliable. There's a comic that kind of expresses this, both this sense of recognizing the unreliability and the feeling of being short-shrifted by this truth. It's like, you know, we feel like, you know, somebody has cheated us. It's either, you know, we've made a mistake, somebody else has cheated us, or the universe has cheated us. As opposed to just like, no, this is the way it is. Kind of aligning ourselves with that truth. A friend of mine sent me this comic, a fellow Dharma teacher. This is a Pearls Before Swine comic, which is the, you know, the little animals. There's the mouse and the pig and the alligators that kind of have these communities. Mouse is sitting at a desk writing a letter. Dear life, I am writing to you to express my dissatisfaction. First, I didn't ask to be here. You put me here. That started us off on a bad foot. Given that rocky start, I'd think you'd strive to be a good host. But no, you fill this place with unpleasant surprises. And as if that's not enough, at some point, I apparently cease to exist in a manner that is most likely shocking, painful, and tragic. Can you say ripoff? Please provide a refund. And then Pig walks up, and Mouse says to Pig, "Where do I send one of these?" This is kind of the, you know, this is where we are. We recognize the unreliability of life at some level, but feel like it's a mistake. We feel like somebody's to blame, or we're to blame, or the universe is to blame. It should not be like this. It is like this. So the rub we experience around this truth, you know, as we navigate our lives, we discover the unreliability of experience. There's different ways we discover this unreliability, you know, this rub with this truth of unreliability. One of the ways is that we meet unpleasant experience. You know, unpleasant experience, yep, that's pretty clearly not reliable. Unpleasant experience comes and goes. Unpleasant experience is a fact of life. And whatever has come into being in this moment, it's already here. With unpleasant experience, we tend to spend a chunk of our energy resisting that unpleasantness has come into being. It's already here. It's already here. Learning how to be with that unpleasant experience without reactivity creates the conditions for us not to simply sit there and be rolled over by the unpleasantness. Because we have agency. And we do have agency in our lives. In our being. We have the capacity to act. And so if we can acknowledge and fully recognize, yes, this has come into being, this painful experience, this oppression, this unjust world, this planet that is warming up, all of the suffering of our society, the war, the disease, the global warming, the racism, sexism, homophobia, all of that deeply painful experience. It has come into being. Now, understanding that, aligning with that as, yes, that has come into being, is not the same thing as saying, it's come into being and I'm not going to do anything about it. It is a recognition, yes, this is what is here. And from the place of the heart that is aligned with, yes, this is what is here. This very unreliable experience, this very painful experience. The heart that is not fighting that, spending its energy fighting the truth that it has come to be, has energy to step into the future with wisdom, with compassion. Compassion, the definition of compassion is the heart that wants to act to alleviate suffering in this world. So this aligning with the truth to me is a place of dignity and courage. And that courage can carry us into wise action. So this is one aspect of the unreliable nature of experience, just the unpleasant side of things. The reactivity we have around this kind of experience is sometimes called dukkha-dukkha. Because it's the unpleasantness is dukkha, that definition of just the unpleasantness of experience, and then the reaction to it is also dukkha. It's like a double arrow of dukkha, dukkha-dukkha. We can meet this dukkha with a heart that responds rather than reacts. And so this is one way in which our experience is unreliable, probably the most obvious way in which our experience is unreliable. You know, we're not going to try to hang our hat of happiness on that experience. And yet the kind of challenge perhaps for us is also not to hang our hat on trying to construct something that we're going to hang our hat on in the future. Because that too is is bound to change, bound to be unreliable. This teaching about around unreliability is a real challenge for us. So this experience to this point feels unreliable, but maybe I can construct something in the future that will be reliable. And we're asked to, it's this paradox of taking action to move towards non-suffering without hanging on to any particular form or construction. And it's a challenge for us. It's a deep challenge. So this rub around unreliability, we meet this also when things are pleasant. Perhaps this is where we really feel the rub of unreliability, because we feel like we've arrived, perhaps, in certain areas of our life, maybe not everywhere, but, you know, oh, I found the right job, or I've got the relationship that works for me, or, you know, I've got a situation that I'm happy with, or people are respectful of me, or a whole variety of things that, again, are happiness depending on situations, on people's opinions, on something constructed. And the law of impermanence tends to win at some point. And if we, you know, it's actually really good news that our happiness does not depend upon the conditions of the world. Because if it did, it would be hopeless. It would be utterly hopeless. The news that the Buddha brought is really good news, actually, that yes, there is this condition of vulnerability, this condition of unreliability, this tumbling forward of changing experience. And it's possible to be at ease with that, not needing to land anywhere, but paradoxically, in the process of being in that tumbling, we aren't just tumbled about haphazardly. In that tumbling forward, in that moment-to-moment living our lives, as we arrive in the present moment and fully live recognizing what's happening in the present moment, we act in more skillful ways. Tumbling the conditions towards more freedom of suffering for ourselves and for others, because we cannot free ourselves without impacting the world. We cannot open our hearts without having that have some resonance in the world. So when we have this rub around, when we experience that suffering, essentially, anytime we're experiencing some kind of struggle in our lives where it feels like this is just wrong, it shouldn't be this way, or I should be able to fix it, or somebody is to blame, or the universe is to blame, anytime we feel that rub, basically there's some pointing for us back to this truth of impermanent and unreliable. Can we open to that truth rather than fighting it? We spend so much energy fighting the truth. So much energy goes into resistance and fear and confusion and anger and pride and arrogance and wanting and constructing, endlessly constructing our lives, trying to construct something. It's like building sandcastles with the waves coming in, endlessly trying to build it, even as it's falling apart. We spend so much energy doing that with this hope of creating a reliability. And as we kind of land in this truth of impermanent and unreliable and stop resisting that truth, a lot of energy is freed up to navigate the world in a new way. To find our way to this heart. This is so much of the resistance to this truth creates constriction in the heart, creates tightness, creates anger, creates confusion. We all get into our own little worlds and bubbles and try to protect and defend our turf. And that very movement is creating suffering, not only for ourselves, but for others. We get tribal, you know, we band with our own kind of people and try to protect our resources within those that group and keep it from other people so we can have more of it. That's all motivated by that same pattern of trying to control, trying to find this happiness in this unreliable way. And so when we let go of that, there's a lot of energy freed up to meet the world with a heart of wisdom, with a heart that responds to suffering, naturally resonates with wanting to help, with wanting to alleviate suffering, not from anger, but from a heart that is unconstricted. So the releasing of that rub against this unreliability creates this soft heart, this heart that resonates, vibrates with the world, and more naturally responds. So this soft heart that meets unreliability, that is open to that truth, open to that truth of unreliability. The soft heart that meets unreliability. There's balance in there, kindness in there, compassion in there, maybe even some interest, some curiosity in there about what's this that's happening right now. Rather than endlessly trying to fix, it's like, wow, this is new. What's this? Every moment is new. When we open to this truth of unreliability, we are also opening to the freshness of every moment, the newness of every moment. The curiosity can be awakened there too. And so this opening to this truth of unreliability does not have to be depressing. It doesn't have to be conducive to despair or frustration. In some ways, I thought, just as I was reflecting on this earlier tonight, I was thinking there's a couple different ways that we get caught around this unreliability. And this being caught around unreliability is basically forms of wanting it to be otherwise. First, the first piece that I recognized or thought about is that the belief, and this is the belief of greed and aversion, that there must be something that is reliable. And because of that, we're caught in that belief. Then we act in ways to try to have things, to try to get rid of things. So the believing there's some kind of reliability creates the conditions for us to try to hold on to things, to push things away, to try to navigate world through greed and aversion rather than through this open heart. So that's one way that this rub with unreliability happens, that we believe it should not be that way. So it's directly countering that. In fact, you know, we not only believe it should be that way, but that belief is so subterranean that we don't even know that we believe it. It's just truth. It should be reliable. If it's not reliable, there's something wrong. I haven't figured it out, or someone's to blame. So it's so subterranean that we don't even recognize that error of belief. As we start to recognize, actually, yes, and we can begin to turn towards this. The Buddha actually encouraged his own son, I think his son in his teenage years, to cultivate the perception of unreliability. Begin to recognize this belief about reliability is just a mistake. It's not a true belief. So we can do this by just recognizing, yeah, okay, things are unreliable. And rather than that belief telling us, oh, you did it wrong, it's like, oh, no, oh, there's unreliability at work. Okay. So cultivating that perception, turning towards that exploration, that we, you know, just orient our minds to recognizing, oh, yep, there's unreliability again. Oh, there's unreliability again. See how it impacts you to recognize that. As we begin to recognize, oh, yep, there's unreliability again, over and over again, we uncover a deeper layer of clinging and craving around this. And that is that we deeply, deeply do not want it to be this way. We want it to be reliable, even as we see it's unreliable. That seeing that it's unreliable really exposes essentially the wanting itself of wanting things to be reliable. And this is a very deep kind of wanting. It's not the wanting of things. It's not the wanting of this or that. It's the wanting there to be somewhere, please, somewhere, that I could find happiness by landing on something. I've experienced this in my meditation at times where the depth of this wanting, you know, just recognizing the heart that is just searching. There must be some place to land, some place that happiness will be found. And in that particular retreat, this was a couple years ago, it was so clear to me that this was such a deep wanting. You know, it wasn't that just telling myself, you know, I did tell myself, it's like, yeah, I know. You're not going to find it, but search away. You know, it's like, I recognize that I wasn't going to be able to stop that searching or stop that wanting. And so the way to explore that is to basically feel into the wanting of that, wanting that truth not to be true, essentially. Deeply feeling into that wanting. And in moments, that wanting something to be reliable, just wanting that truth not to be so. In moments, that wanting that truth not to be so would just release. And in the moment of the release of that wanting it not to be so, there's the recognition of the pain there in that wanting is in the wanting itself. When that wanting goes away, there is no problem. It's just the heart meeting experience that's endlessly changing without fear, without confusion, without resistance, without holding on. And in that meeting, acting with openness. So this is a process of opening to this truth, mostly by beginning to explore this truth of unreliability with you tonight. I want to encourage you to recognize those times where you're fighting it, resisting it. That's the first step. Notice even that you believe there should be something reliable. And it's not, you're not alone. we all have that wish. We cultivate tools to support our meeting of this truth. We cultivate balance of mind. We open with our experience with mindfulness. We begin to recognize, as we turn to our experience with mindfulness, the way that in some ways it's really simple. We feel into the heart, and we feel when the heart is resisting, when the heart is reactive, the heart hurts. When the heart is non-resistant and non-reactive, the heart releases. And that, as we explore that in the present moment, in this, it can just be really simple. Oh, anger. Ooh, the heart hurts with anger. Ooh, compassion. Ooh, the heart aches but feels non-constricted with compassion. And so there's the openness and the constriction. And we feel that. We feel that pattern. We feel the opening. We feel the constriction. And the through mindfulness, our hearts and minds begin to deeply understand this kind of swinging between tightness and openness, and tightness and openness. And without even having to try to force ourselves to move towards openness, because our hearts and our system, our organism, actually wants to move towards well-being. The open heart has this experience of well-being. And our organism wants to move towards well-being. And so the organism begins to gravitate towards the open heart. And then it constricts again. And then it feels the pain of that. Maybe it releases a little bit. And the system begins to more and slowly trust the open heart. It is a process of trust, and it's a slow process. It's like what we have been trusting is the constriction. That's what we've been trusting in terms of navigating our lives. And as we start to open, there can be some fear. Will I be okay? Is this trustable, this openness? Will I be safe? Will I be healthy? Will I be at ease with this open heart? And this is a slow process, because we feel our way into that open heart, and then something happens, and something happens and we constrict again. Our open heart is not quite fully open, and so it's vulnerable and gets hurt. And we close down. Ooh, we feel the pain of the closing down. And so there's a slow, gradual process of this. A slow, gradual process of learning to let go of the believing in the trust of the constriction, and opening slowly, slowly. In my experience, it is a really slow process to open to trusting that open heart. And so you don't have to force it. You don't have to force yourself to be in that place. In fact, we can't really at times. But honor where you are. If there is a little bit of that opening, and then, fear comes up. It's like, okay, fear. Be with the fear with dignity. Open to that with dignity. That very opening to that is, in a way, a movement in the direction of trusting the open heart. It's trusting the heart to be open around contraction. Can it hold that? So it's a slow process of moving towards well-being. We slowly begin to trust it. And we begin to, actually, the trust partly comes because we really begin to recognize that the trust is paradoxical, because it's not a trust. Again, it's we think it's trust. We think we're supposed to be able to find trust in something. And things are not trustable. They are unreliable. Experiences are not trustable. They are unreliable. What people think about us is not trustable. It's unreliable. What is trustable is the truth. And this moment of experience can be known and met with an open heart, that's possible. So the trust that I'm talking about, it's like, it's not only learning to trust. I mean, initially it seems in that movement of letting go of the trust, or, you know, shifting our trust from the trust of this constriction to the trust of the open heart. Initially, it's like we're holding on to the open heart. Like, okay, this is trustable. This peace is trustable. Well, the peace is going to vanish too. The calm is going to vanish too. And so initially we move towards holding on to something, some state of mind is trustable perhaps. But then we have to even go further. And the trust becomes an alignment with truth. It's like this. And when there's not resistance to it's like this, the heart can release and will act. That it's not a release into some. I used to think that like that freedom that the Buddha was talking about was like some otherworldly place or something. But it is the peace of aligning yourself with things as they are, and that alignment allows us to, we step into the next moment very naturally with wisdom and compassion. Not so much a doing, but just a natural response. So, I've talked the whole time again. Thank you for your attention. I'm happy to stay if anybody has any questions and wants to come up and ask anything. I'm happy to stay for a little while.